I just realized this hoodie has like the weirdest look, like in person. It's like one of those that has like a, it's not like a real hoodie, it's like a collar hoodie. But like when you put it on, it's like you have no neck at all.
It's yeah, it's gone. I feel like I almost hoodie, like I almost never actually wear it up.
I think the hoodie
Like
aesthetic is
it's like
like,
it's kind of like a man scarf.
it's kind of, and like this is why this one's nice, because it's like it wraps around the neck a little bit, but it's not like so much so of a hood, but you can wear it as a hood, but it just makes you look like really dumb if you do it. And like, oh Matt, you look so gangster now, like especially with that plastic utensil that you just had in your hand.
Oh,
Like
yeah.
only gangsters use plastic spoons.
Yes, sir. Oh, this is actually, oh, here we go. Here's a weird thing. Okay.
Okay.
You know fidget spinners and how they're great for when you want to spin a fidget?
Spin it.
Take a spoon
Okay.
and
Oh,
better than a fidget
ooh.
spinner.
Oh man.
Total game changer.
Oh man. Why didn't they just make fidget spoons, Matt?
I don't know.
That could have been like a really good product release. It's just like, are you hungry for pudding and also really anxious?
Ooh.
Try a fidget spoon.
Fidget spoon. Yeah. It's for real.
I have to say, it's been a minute since I've been in an Apple store. But boy, those men and women are very friendly and very forward.
It's man, it's been a long time since I've actually been inside one.
Let me tell you about my experience that I had today in the Colorado Springs Apple store. I walked in immediately. Hey man, what can we help you with? I'm picking up an online order. All right, let me get someone over for you. Why don't you go stand by the watch table? So I just got to watch like all of these Apple watches that had like Woody and Jessie from Toy Story just like
Oh
dancing around
yeah.
on them for some reason. Because you know, like Toy Story is still relevant. Sure.
Synergy.
Then an employee came up and he's like, "Hey, what are you doing picking up?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And gave him my ID, gave him my car, and he's like, "Yeah, that's you." And he's like, "What are you doing using it for?" And I'm just like, "I just want a computer."
Just
Just
computer
computer
stuff.
stuff. And I was like, mentioned screenwriting, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I went to film school and I got his whole film writing spiel." And he came back with the computer. It was very he was very helpful. Every person in that store is incredibly helpful. I also got complimented on my shoes.
Nice.
So
Wow. Some an all around good experience.
a very good Apple Store experience, but that Windows Store. Ugh.
Gotta go get the battery replaced in my Zune.
I was listening to my Zune on the way to the Blockbuster video the other day.
Poor Zune. Poor Zune.
Zune had potential.
It did, actually. I
It
remember playing
actually
with one of my friends and I was like, oh, this is actually like, this is not
it
bad.
was very satisfying to like scroll through a Zune when I had the chance to do it the one time I
Yeah.
did.
But it got nothing on that click wheel. That was
That click wheel
magic.
is just like, do you remember The Onion released like a video where it's like, we're introducing the iMac, or what was it? It was the MacBook wheel, where instead of a keyboard, we've installed a giant click wheel. So you have to scroll through the keyboard every time you want to type and tap the center button to enter the letter. And it just speeds things up so much.
I have not seen this, but it sounds
Oh,
like some classic Onion material.
that is a wonderful Onion video that I'll have to. It's like a tech. They have it on display at a tech conference, and they're just like, it's so inconvenient, but I love using it for the design.
Oh, yep. Oh, Apple products. Yep.
You're wonderful. Please sponsor us.
I love you, and sometimes I hate you, but mostly I love you.
But mostly, I love you.
Yeah.
Moms? Are you there? Do you love Apple products? Do you?
My mom loves Apple products.
My mom eats apples. And also uses a MacBook and an iPad and, like, iPhone. So, yeah, she loves Apple products. Hi, moms. Welcome to Screenplay Book Club. I'm Hunter.
And I'm Matt.
And this is a podcast where we talk about screenplays in a book club format. I almost biffed that intro again, just like last week. Dear God. But, yeah, here we talk about screenplays in a book club format, and we're going to have some fun this week. But before we get into that, Matt, how are you doing?
Pretty good. Work has been something, and screenwriting has been a nice release to actually, like, get to sit back and imagine a world in my mind. So, only wrote, like, 3-something pages, but felt good about it. So, yeah, that's what I'm doing. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I finished my first draft of my pilot.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's a lot shorter than I wanted it to be, but I know where I want to take it for a second draft, and I realized that plotting out an entire course for a season is very beneficial to crafting things in a pilot when you are trying to set up a lot of things to happen.
Right.
So I am working on making sure I have all of my storylines solidified and just going to go back into a rewrite, hopefully setting a deadline for mid-April. And hopefully we have a better draft coming out of there.
I mean, you know, second draft, pretty much always better than first draft.
This is going to be interesting because this is like one of the rare instances where the second draft, I think, is going to be purposefully longer than the first one, but in a beneficial way.
Yeah. No, that's very true because my, yeah, first drafts are, for me, just always expansive and, yeah, like, hard to get down to, like, the 30s, so.
Yeah, this is kind of, like, the opposite, like, course plotting. Like, I'm at 48 pages, I think, but I want to be near, like, 60. Gotcha. So, it's not too far off, but it's just enough where I need to put a little more meat on the bones.
Gotcha.
Excellent. Should we break into our main topic of discussion tonight?
I think we should. And all right. This week, we're discussing 12 Monkeys by David and Janet Peebles.
They are both Peebles.
They are. Both writer Peebles.
So, Matt, this is a film you've seen previously, correct?
Yes. Quite a while ago, it feels like, but yes.
Okay, so you had, like, some notion going in what you were going to experience.
Yes. Yeah, I forgot a lot of the specifics of the middle, but I remembered the beginning and the ending, which is the same thing, so.
I was completely unfamiliar with this going in, so it'll be an interesting topic of discussion for that. But how did you feel about it with knowing what to expect?
I liked it, but I don't know. It's supposed to be, I've had it built up to me as like a classic, and it didn't feel like a classic to me. It felt pretty good. Like I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think it's like, it's plotted really well, but I could do for some more character stuff, but mostly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I have to feel similar on that. I feel like the script was doing a lot right, but I also felt that there were some pitfalls with some characterizations and how characters were introduced and played out throughout the whole thing. But coming in blind, I really enjoyed the story of it. It worked very much as a round, I guess would be a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Circular storytelling, I suppose, is the best way to say it. Sorry, you guys. I've had 2 beers.
Nice.
And I'm on my third. maybe not the best thing to do before this sort of movie, but whatever. To each their own.
Yeah, I mean, I've had some wine, so.
Exactly. It's perfect. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought there was some very tense action moments. I thought there was some good downtime in between those moments, and then I thought there was just some meh moments, but I generally enjoyed it.
Do you want to talk about themes?
I think it's a time to talk about themes and thematic elements of this. So why don't you go first so I can figure out what my theme is?
My theme for this week, for this script, is that reality is a collective insanity.
Explain.
The film deals with insanity like very directly. Sort of trying to remember what it was like to not know everything. So I did, you know, obviously my best to sort of read it that way, but I knew where it was going. But it does like lead you up to think, is this a crazy person? And then it sort of flips the tables and says, like, has a psychiatrist start to sort of go crazy herself. And it's it's this great build to this finale where they're like, maybe we're crazy, maybe that's fine. And it's just sort of this idea that collectively, everyone is a little crazy.
I would agree with that. We get a lot of good insanity moments from all of our main players for the most part, and it's well done through that, showing that sort of change from... It shows a good spectrum where it is... We have someone who thinks they're crazy, and we also have someone who is rational and turns crazy. And do we have anyone that goes from like crazy to super rational, or is it mostly just like leaning towards that insanity bit? It feels like it leans mostly towards the insanity of everything.
Yeah, I feel like it really steers into that. Yeah.
So we don't get all sides, but we get like a decent one side of the spectrum of like leaning towards that insanity. Let's see what my theme is this week. I really wanted to roll with like even like the smallest bit, like even the smallest moment can create a lifetime of change. We get this moment where Cole, I guess we're going straight to the finale with this, but like where Cole like finds out who is behind all this and what is happening. And just like living in that moment has made a change for the future, or at least we're supposed to believe that change happens in the future, even though I think we can extrapolate and talk more on that when we get to our things to consider. But it definitely seems that even just like the smallest instance of interaction can cause a huge change. It's very much a butterfly effect sort of script, and we see that numerous times throughout.
Yeah, butterfly effect is a good reference there. This is as far as the whole circular nature, and it is really focused all on that one moment, and we're going to sort of dive into whether or not that focus works in one of our things to consider. But yeah, absolutely. It's just definitely very singly focused, single-minded on that moment.
Sure. Speaking of the butterfly effect, just as an aside, movie I enjoyed but is critically not enjoyed.
I've only ever seen like the first half hour, so I don't really know how I feel about it.
Well, either way, watch the butterfly effect, guys. Let me know how you feel.
It's a free one.
I like it. Things to consider? Designing principle? What do you want to do?
Oh, designing principle, right.
Because it's like, make a time travel movie, but like, is it time travel? Make a movie where a viewer questions if they time travel or if they're just insane.
Yeah. Like, like a time travel movie that examines how a human can exist in two dimensions.
That's something. I mean, we get that instance with Cole and young Cole, so I think it works in that way. It's just, it gets almost paradoxical, but does it actually get to be a paradox?
Exactly. Sorry, I lost you. I heard paradox.
I lost you a little bit too. Yeah, but it's like, is it a paradox or, like, does it offer enough to actually be a paradox? I don't know my paradoxes well enough to like know if this actually falls into the paradoxical realm.
Yeah, it definitely, it's very much a time travel movie in that I don't know if you really, really think about it, I don't know that it makes sense. But if you think about it, like, up to a certain threshold, it's very good.
Yeah, it's very just circular. Just, like, let it happen. Yeah. Whatever. Things to consider?
3 of them this week.
Yes, we have 3. Not 12, unfortunately not.
Oh.
But we do not want to gush for, like, 3 hours on that.
That'd be quite a cast.
That would also be, like, hell to try and figure out, like, I mean, we could do it, but, like, 12 discrete things to consider.
That's a couple essays, essentially.
Yes. Let's not do that.
No. Yeah, just 3, I think.
Let's do the 3. Do you want to read them off? Do you want me to read them off?
You can take them.
Okay. So, things to consider. Thing to consider number 1, limiting information for a reader. Number 2. Repetition and iconography, and repetition and iconography, and repetition and iconography, and continuing on. And number 3, satisfactory ending? Endings is beginnings, beginnings is endings. We'll see. But let's talk about limiting the information that we give a reader. My main thought on this thing to consider is the whole, I guess there's a few things that we can talk about. There is the dream sequence turning into reality as limiting that information. There is the whole Mr. Ponytail and Dr. Peters. And I think there's like a limitation set on a lot of information throughout this entire script, and I think those are our main talking points on this thing to consider.
Yeah, and then I think we should also get into, as just a little thing within this thing, like, does it feel fair the way it limits information?
Right. That makes sense. My main thing about limiting information was the whole Mr. Ponytail, Dr. Peters reveal that we don't get until like the last 15-20 pages.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that and calling a character Mr. Ponytail and revisiting him numerous times throughout only to then call him a different thing? Which I feel like it makes sense as a viewer, but as a reader, do you want to include all your information in there, or do you want this to be revealed as the movie would?
I guess I want it to be like the movie, but that doesn't mean I think it reads as good withholding of information. So like I don't really mind a misdirect, I guess, but right. I don't mind a misdirect, but this just felt like we're chasing our big bad the whole movie, and
Right. Then
the reveal doesn't really change anything significant for
right,
me.
Right, because like continue to finish.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say it's not like in the Prestige. That's mm-hmm. a great reveal, and it alters everything you've seen before it. And Right. This is just sort of a late game reveal to me.
Yeah, because we're introduced to this character early on, and now it's like, oh, now we're supposed to recognize him as this person that we met as, like, a doomsday kook in the beginning. I agree a lot with that, because we've already seen this scene so much that with nothing changing, we don't really have a lot. And since it's revealed that Brad Pitt's character, whose name is Jeffrey that Jeffrey is not this like big bad character like as they had set him up, it's a misdirect in that, but having it be Dr. Peters in the end doesn't change anything. It adds a little tension of will we stop him or not, but at the same time it doesn't matter who it is at that point. It's just can we stop this person from spreading the virus rather than who is it going to be.
Yeah, it I guess, like, never mind, I was going to circle back on something we already said.
That's perfect for this sort of podcast, though.
Oh, man, yes. That's what it is. It's a 12-hour podcast,
and oh, we just God.
Talk in circles.
Matt, I cannot do for a 12-hour podcast.
12 hours.
That would be an interesting 12-hour marathon podcast that we split into, like, somehow split into, like, 12 separate episodes to just, like, release. We just marathon everything.
That would be pretty incredible.
We're going to marathon a whole season of Breaking Bad next time.
Yes.
Oh, if we can find the scripts.
Oh, that would be incredible.
Guys, if you have full seasons of Breaking Bad, just send us those PDFs and we will do that whole cycle season in one go. Let's not diverge on that.
We have three scripts from Breaking Bad, but not a whole season.
We do. Yeah, we should stay on task, though.
Yes.
Rather than breaking to another podcast that we need to start. But also, like, do you feel like the 12 Monkeys army or the army of the 12 Monkeys is limiting information, like realizing that we are only releasing animals from the zoo and then like revealing? I feel like there's some sort of limit of information there where maybe it's just a misdirect where the audience is supposed to believe that this is just an animal rights activist group, but deeper down we know, even though Jeffrey has come out and said, no, I'm not that person, that we know that he's just clinically insane.
Yeah.
Okay. Easy answer.
Yes.
I guess I don't want to get too much into the ending / beginning.
Right, until we get to
that thing to consider. Do you have any other examples where information is very like limited or anything to the reader?
I think one that was a good reveal to me was the reveal that this was all Cole's idea, at least allegedly, where you know, you are taking the word of a madman, but unreliable narrator aside, that I thought was a nice reveal.
I did really enjoy that. Especially for time travel stories, I think it's important that you show how they fucked up by going back in time. So, like, trying to find where the virus started, but screwing up and going too far back in time, and having that seed planted in Jeffrey's mind by Cole, who seems mad at the point, but he is very accurate to what is happening. It is almost Inception-like, where it's like, we're going to plant a base idea, and we'll let that flower into a greater, grander idea over time. And right. It really reminded me of Inception in that one moment, by planting the basic necessity of it.
Right. And what's great is that this is just like one small moment that they almost gloss over a little bit. It's brought up a couple times.
Yeah.
But it's, I guess what I'm trying to say is just like a great moment and a small moment in the film.
I also did like how Jeffrey was like turning it to make it seem like it was very much Cole didn't just bring up that the human race was going to be exterminated. He brought up that we should exterminate the human race. I thought that was a very good turn of words, and it really helps question the insanity that Cole is experiencing and makes you wonder if our narrator that we're following, our protagonist, is reliable or if he is unreliable as Jeffrey is.
And that's maybe the sort of biggest example of limiting information is this whole, is he crazy or is he not? Because really until the last page, you're not totally sure. And then on that final page, who is it? The astrophysicist. So, that, I think, you know, just the whole film of Is He Crazy, Is He Not? And I think that is the most successful example for me of limiting information, because if we knew time travel was real the whole time, then it's just a much less interesting film.
Right. Speaking of just, like, limited information, real quick, I don't know if this really fits under here, but talking about the raspy voice and Louis, I can't remember what the actual name is, but did that add or detract anything for you? Did it make it seem like this was a person that was also being sent back and, like, helping at all in a way, or was it just kind of there?
I thought Louis was a fun wrench in the system, but didn't do a ton for me.
No, like, he seemed just like as a person or a voice to help us parse that maybe Cole is going insane, because the voice just happens to appear randomly throughout, especially, like, in the airport where the raspy voice happens and then this person comes out of the right. stall with a very high-pitched voice. So that moment was, like, one of the more confusing parts. Like, how does this work if we don't actually have Louis or the raspy voice there? Like, this is the moment where we're still questioning, is he insane? And I don't know if that's great to do, like, right at the climactic moment, but at the same time, it's also very smart of them to do, because then we don't know until the final minute or two of the film or the last two pages of the script.
Yeah. No, I think that's very much them playing with us. Doing it right, as you said, right, sort of the penultimate moment.
Which I guess is fair. As a filmmaker, you want to keep a viewer or reader on their toes. You just can't hand them everything on a silver platter. Where's the excitement in that?
There is none.
Exactly. So you have to at least play a little bit. So I guess that's where it starts to be a little fair with the confusion. But at the same time, it's like, either way.
Yeah, it's toeing the line.
Should we talk about the Florida Keys and the monkeys and all of the keys
all of
that happen here?
Let's.
All of the repetition and iconography?
Yes, and let's talk about the repetition and the iconography.
And how about we talk about the repetition and the iconography?
Let's not skip over the Florida Keys also.
Perfect. Okay.
Cool.
Now that we're on the same page. We can still have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, how did you feel about... I really... There were moments where I thought it started to be too much. But part of me also really enjoyed the recurring, like, Florida Keys. Keys. Like, just everything with a key and relating to chimps and apes and monkeys. It felt right, but a little trite.
It's just like there's so much, and I like it, but it's so much.
I understand repetition in a movie because it helps establish themes and, like, thematic natures, and I wish I would have done, like, a more thorough read of this than rather a straight through read. This is probably where our second read structure probably would have done us very good, rather than our single read that we have become so accustomed with. But I wonder, and I would like to revisit this script now that I'm thinking of this. So does the iconography of monkeys and keys coincide with a character questioning their sanity? And if so, in what way do these characters change? And that's what I want to investigate on, like, a re-listen or, like, a re-read of this or a rewatch of it.
Yeah, so Florida Keys is brought up almost exclusively in the dream sequence.
Well, the Florida Keys are also brought up, like, when he's breaking out of the psych ward, when he's trying to break out. That's, like,
on the television. Right.
So, because they keep mentioning the key while he's holding a key. So it's very, very direct in that sense.
Yes, very. It is. Oh, it is oddly key-centric.
It's not even monkey-centric. It's more like key-centric, and then like imagery of monkeys appears throughout. And like even then, like the monkey imagery is not very like set on anything, because it's just like the monkeys are exploring the city or something like that.
Yeah, there's Gorilla Cage.
It makes you wonder, like, why the army of 12 monkeys? I understand it's an army of, like, animal rights activists that have gone radical in a way, but what makes the monkey imagery so profound in this film and in the script?
So I wonder if it's, you know, because it is this whole animal rights thing, but... you know, we're doing these horrible things, or in the script they're doing horrible things to monkeys as like test subjects. Mm-hmm. And there's sort of a parallel there with what they're doing to coal. Whoops.
Okay.
Coal, I think.
As like a test subject on this time travel.
Right. So like the monkey imagery, I think, is sort of like, you know, the monkeys are like analogs for us. So.
Okay.
I think maybe, like, that sort of, like...
Oh my god, we are the monkeys.
We are the monkey. It was planet Earth all along!
You damn dirty apes! Man, that was a great movie. All of them were. I mean, at least the newer ones and the original 60s one, but whatever. I think that's an accurate representation. Like, we can... correlate the images of monkeys and kind of put them towards ourselves, though I do feel like it got very on the nose with like animal rights and like we're testing on animals and all we are is animals, we should just kill all of us and let the animals take control of the world. It felt very
sort of juvenile.
Yeah, just like the I mean, granted, most of the dialogue on that was coming from someone who we are deeming as insane. So, like, I guess simpler language is okay. It can get somewhat of a pass, but it felt very direct and not...
Yeah, it wasn't very nuanced.
not at all. It was very animal rights-esque, but I think... In a way, sci-fi almost gets a pass at a lot of that because sci-fi is taking what we have going wrong in society and elevating it to 11 and determining what could happen from there and why this is going to go wrong in the future.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we all love Black Mirror.
I mean, Jesus Christ. That show, man. Boy,
boy howdy.
That is a show for cynics and nihilists.
Just before we leap off of number two,
yes.
So the repetition of the dream sequence.
Yes.
For me, it was a little,
much?
Yeah, it was a lot. I think it was one thing we can agree on the script is that it's not afraid to hammer you over the head a little bit.
No, the thing is, like, I understand repeating a sequence in time like that if we are given new information each time. But I feel like thou we are given new information. Though we're given some new information within, like, the first revisits of this dream sequence, quote-unquote, it is very difficult to notice differences in each of them. Some of them just feel like they're repeated to repeat and just be a nagging thing on Cole. But it just does not work as well as I think they want it to.
Yeah.
Because I want... I want those images slash memories to be revealing. Like in Memento, if we want to go back to like another memory, like kind of time travel esque based thing, as Nolan is wont to do, like Memento, were revealed information during each flashback and during each flash forward. Like we understand what is happening and why things happen because of what we see prior or after. And I wish we would have gotten more of that in these sequences here, where if it was revealing like bombshells of information, I think it would have succeeded a lot better than just revisiting it often.
Yeah, just it's way too much. And the one maybe saving grace of it is that I think maybe it's sort of meant to replicate his experience, because this is something he fixated on, like he dreams about it all the time. But
right.
I think that's kind of a sort of a flimsy
a cop out.
Yes.
Yep. Since we're talking about this dream sequence, why don't we just like hop right into this ending, beginning, and is it satisfactory? Like, is it something that you enjoyed? Did it feel satisfying in the end?
So it's very like neat and circular, and I like that. So that is satisfying. But I don't know, somehow it is nice because he does give, you know, essentially dies, but humanity is saved. Mm-hmm. So that, like, again, that also feels nice, but there's something about it that just I think feels a little hollow. And wow, that's the second time I hit the mic tonight, jeez. So it feels a little hollow because one of the things that we didn't really talk about much is this relationship that
right.
kind of is, again, sort of flimsy, just to use a word that's on the top of my mind.
Right.
And I think the ending feels better and more satisfactory if that feels realer, but
right.
that felt sort of very forced to me, and it was something I wish felt better, because it's something that feels like a germ of a good idea, but that's just not totally executed on.
So I think the relationship with Riley, however you want to pronounce it. I'm going to say Riley.
That was my guess.
That sounds right. The relationship with Riley really takes this trope that seems really common in film, where someone is kidnapped and then the person who's kidnapped like falls in love or like starts to have feelings for the person who kidnapped them. And it just didn't feel organic enough for them to feel it as real. And even if it did feel real, it happened very late in the game, where Cole is just shot dead like 10 minutes later. So it doesn't feel like it had a lot of, it had time to bloom, but the blooming period was just not very long. And it just didn't bloom in a very good or natural way, especially if we're talking about that sort of trope.
Yeah, which, you know, is a little sad, because it's supposed to be this really nice moment. And, you know, it is almost supposed to be like, it's this whole, I mean, the whole film really is very, like, sort of romanticized. And mm-hmm. it just, you know, again, it's the circular nature I really loved. And I think it ties, you know, doesn't leave a lot of loose ends, but that's, you know, like good plotting is not enough, I think.
Right. And I just wish I had more of that relationship and it felt better, because when it came to that supply closet, like sex scene, I was very much just out of it and not into that scene at all. I'd much rather see them as partners working together rather than partners and lovers, you know?
Yeah, the lovers just didn't feel like it needed to be there.
It didn't seem like it was a viable relationship or anything that needed to be added, because it didn't detract or add anything to the actual
yeah
film plot line.
Right, yeah, you can lift it right out if you want to. No problem.
Exactly. Another thing with the ending I want to talk about is the moment where Dr. Peters opens one of these glass tubes and has the TSA agent basically smell it. So my question is, did they actually prevent anything from happening?
It's kind of nice and ambiguous, huh?
Because my answer for that is like, oh, even though they tried so hard and the astrophysicist is there, like, nothing has changed because you still have this person who's now infected, assumingly, coming into contact with many individuals going to many different places.
All over the... Like, this is a much better plan than whatever his original plan was.
Exactly. Like I'm going to take... I'm going to go to 6 places all in 1 week with all these tubes. No, like, just have someone at the airport.
Yeah, just... apparently, you can just open up whatever you want there.
See, now, was that the plan all along? Because, like,
maybe
if he put it in the, like, x-ray machine to get his bag checked, like, he had to know that he was going to get stopped for glass tubes in a suitcase.
Right. I mean, he does have all the papers. Like,
exactly. He has all the papers, but, like, he has to know that this is going to happen. So is that the genius plan all along? Like, is there no way to prevent this? And this is just stuck on an infinite loop of trying to stop it and nothing happening. Which I very much enjoyed that mindset of following the story much better.
And I mean, they even hinted that early on that, like, I mean, he says multiple times through the script, like, I can't change anything. I literally just want information. And they really do sort of, they plant that seed that, okay, like, maybe you can't actually stop this thing.
And see, now that's a part that we didn't even cover because, like, this wasn't a time travel mission to, like, go and prevent anything. This wasn't preventative measures. This was, we're going to gather information so that we can develop a vaccine so we can aid the future and humans can come up from underground. So I guess, is it successful in a way? Like, is this a quote-unquote success from, like, all of these scientists from the future? Or is this still a failure?
Well, I mean, they get what they want, but they don't get sort of the big win. Big win, obviously, being if you could actually stop this.
Right.
So, I mean, I think they would still call it a success because, yes, they you know, they did say this is a fact-finding mission, essentially, and they found a lot of facts, and they did end up sitting down right next to the guy on the plane, so they're going to get their vaccine.
As a viewer and a reader, I don't feel satisfied with this ending. Like, I think I just want something bigger to happen rather than just having, oh, we got information and now maybe it's going to be okay. Like, we have no resolution, which I'm not saying movies and scripts that have ambiguous endings are failing. But, like, I think it's just stigmatized that we want to know what happens. We want to try to understand.
Yeah, to just dip right back into the Nolan well. Because that's the comparison for this podcast.
It's vast and very good.
And this even definitely iconography, what we already talked about, the Inception is where I'm going with this, is, you know, the obviously incredibly ambiguous ending there. But that really felt like it needed to be ambiguous based on the subject matter. And, but you can almost kind of make that argument here, can't you? If the whole film is kind of meditating on insanity.
True. And it is insanity. And I think I'm going to talk about my Inception point before I hop into my 12 Monkeys point. But, like, with Inception, it's not so much that it's an ambiguous ending, like, is it real or fake? It's that Cobb, Leonardo DiCaprio's character, doesn't care anymore. He just feels comfortable with where he's at.
Right.
Where with 12 Monkeys, I don't know, I can't tell if there's a good character change here because we lost our protagonist. We are met with, like, a a faceless person that we're just called the astrophysicist that we have no other prior information about. Like, it's someone that we've seen on the wayside, but it's not someone that we care about entirely. And it just doesn't feel as strong of an ambiguous ending as what Inception had me feeling
at the end. Yeah, definitely. No, Inception pulls us off much better.
Yeah, I think we'll probably dip back into the Nolanverse eventually.
Yeah, I'm very sure.
Toying with the idea that we're toying with the Nolanverse, but we'll get to Inception eventually in our long podcasting tenure that we've set up for ourselves.
Yes, well, we got decades ahead of us, so
just literal decades, because scripts are out every time. They just keep coming.
They keep making new ones for us.
The scripts keep coming and they don't stop coming. Matt liked that All-Star reference very much.
Nothing like, oh man. Don't like some Smash Mouth.
Gotta have that Smash Mouth in the early Thursday morning, Wednesday evening vibe. Whenever you listen to this, just enjoy Smash Mouth.
Yeah, that's a free thing to consider.
Did you have any little things that you wanted to consider?
Well, I'll tell you what. I wrote down little thing to consider, and then I wrote a dash, and then I wrote nothing next to it. So no, apparently.
Perfect. I excellent. I don't really have a little thing to consider besides, like, time travel movies can be fun. Like, I don't care about paradoxes. Just, like, time travel movies are fun, man.
They are, yeah.
I like them a lot.
Yeah, and when I watched this movie originally, it was as, like, homework, because I was working on a time travel short film at the time.
Oh, I think I watched that trailer. Was that the short was a trailer, or was that...
No, I never actually shot it, no.
Okay, but you shot, like, a trailer for it, am I correct in that?
No.
Or am I... Oh, I'm thinking of a completely different project that you did.
You must be, yeah.
Either way, I'll talk to you that off-air. Anyway... do you have any, let's talk about things to consider about life. That's what I'm going for.
Yeah.
What do you have for us this week, Matt?
I have what I think is an excellent bit of journalism. But guess what? It's the best kind of journalism. It's journalism you can listen to. You don't even have to read anything. You just get to listen to a podcast that I think we've probably talked about on the show before called The Daily. And I guess it just for it's if it's the future, it's the March 21st, 2016 episode. It's real good. It's all about the Cambridge Analytica nonsense. And it's
Did you say 2016 or do you mean 2018?
Oh my goodness. It's my computer. Oh my God, my computer is. Anyways. I have a Hackintosh. It says 2016 for some reason. My date and time is incorrect.
This is a wonderful moment in podcasting history.
Okay, time to fix this nonsense.
We are time traveling. We are podcasting paradoxically between 2 years.
Wow. 2018.
The March 21st,
2018. March 21st, 2018. Anyways, it's real good. Hunter, what's your little your other thing to consider?
My thing to consider is a little video game that is an indie game that I recently started playing because I got Xbox Game Pass, which is a wonderful way to experience a bunch of other games. It is called Hue, H-U-E. It's basically a platformer where you have a color wheel and you can only see specific objects when you are viewing the world in specific colors. Oh. So it is wonderful. It looks like it's won at least 12 laurels, according to the website.
Not bad at all.
Available on Steam, Xbox One, PS4, and PS Vita, apparently. So I'll just link the game website in the show notes for you guys. So that is Hue. H-U-E, the video game.
Nice.
Excellent.
We're all over the internet.
You can find us in multiple sorts of places.
All kinds of places. Facebook. Twice there.
Yeah, join our page, or like our page, and join our group. That's what I was going for.
There it is.
Screenplay Book Club, you can just search that and you'll probably find both of them.
Yeah. Also, there's this other social media platform, and it's called Twitter, and we're on it. And our handle is SPBCPodcast.
You can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/screenplaybookclub. You can support us directly there if you want. Otherwise, another form of direct support is through our tip jar, which is in the show notes.
If you have questions, comments, concerns, or just feel like writing an email, screenplaybookclub@gmail.com.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, pretty much anywhere podcasts are. Don't go on Spotify anymore. That doesn't update like it should since we changed and migrated hosts. But leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to us, because that is beneficial to get our voices in people's ears, and it will help us just, like, become exposed.
And if you're looking for all the episodes, the entire back catalog, you can find it at our lovely vanity URL, screenplaybook.club.
And if you just want to follow two funny guys on Twitter, you can find me at The Hunter Rising.
And you can find me at Matt Dernlin.
And that's social meds.
And I guess that takes us to this question.
Yes.
What are we reading next week?
Matthew, we are going to be reading the fun thriller of crime and kidnapping known as Prisoners, written by Aaron Guzikowski.
Alrighty.
It is a wonderful film by Denis Villeneuve that I very much enjoyed, and I'm excited to see what it looks like on paper.
Excellent. I have not seen the film, so I'll be going blind.
I'm very excited for this. This is one that I've been looking forward to and keeping in my back pocket for a while. Again, that is the final draft of the script for Prisoners, written by Aaron Guzikowski.
Looking forward to it.
And that's it.
There it is.
That's a podcast. Like,
there it goes. Just like
we
that.
We had some technical difficulties, but you're not going to hear them. Nope. Because, like, that gets cut out.
The magic of editing.
That is the magic of editing. And I was going to make a promise that I couldn't keep in the time frame, where I was going to say, through the magic of editing, Matt is going to say a very funny phrase, but...
By all means, go for it, but that's quite a commitment.
I'll commit to that maybe for next week. We'll see how that goes. But I will make Matt say something about maybe, like, pooping or something like that, because that's nice. Just how we would talk.
I'm sure it's come up.
I'm sure... In our entire backlog of episodes, I could splice something together, but that means listening.
That means a lot of listening.
Every single word we've said. If listeners want to make a supercut of poop talk, go for it, I guess.
By all means, please send it in.
We should just quit while we're ahead, Matt.
Deal.
All right, so I guess that's it for Screenplay Book Club this week. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed our discussion about not one, not two, but 12 monkeys by the peoples. But thank you for listening from the bottom of our hearts. We're almost going on a year. This will be episode 49. Next is the big 50. So we're two weeks away from our 1 year anniversary.
Crazy, man.
That's fucking ridiculous.
It's bonkers.
But, thanks to anyone who's listened or downloaded or spread the word and told a friend. For this week of Screenplay Book Club, that's going to be it. I am Hunter.
And I'm Matt.
And keep reading movies with us.